This weekend is the busiest of the year for apple picking in New York State, and word is that this year's crop is especially good. So, on this beautiful fall day, we thought it would be an excellent time to discuss apples on this week's Please Explain. And joining me now is Steve Clark of Prospect Hill Orchards in upstate New York. It's an apple farm that's been in his family for seven generations. Also with us, Dorothy Patent, co-author of A is for Apple, more than 200 recipes for eating, munching, and cooking with America's favorite fruit. It's published by Broadway Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome them both to Please Explain. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So, Steve, tell us about this year's crop. What was it about this year that led to such a strong yield?
Well, it's not so much that it's a strong yield. It's just that it's a really vintage crop in eastern New York. We had a very nice bloom period followed by some warm weather to get the fruit growing, and then just about the right amount of rain, a little dry in June, and then enough showers during the season. And the fall has just been a beautiful fall, a little cool in late August to give us some color, and dry, so the picking conditions have been excellent. A little too warm today. We'd like to see it a little bit more seasonal.
But I'm assuming that it's not just a matter of whether you get the right amount of rain, but when the rain hits.
Yes, it is. And, of course, most of us here don't depend on that entirely. We have irrigation, and I think that just about everybody had started to irrigate. A lot of the newer orchards, the fully dwarf orchards, have permanent irrigation systems, so it's just really a matter of flipping a switch on those.
The Growers Association has dubbed this the Super Bowl weekend for apple picking. How is that done on your farm? Is all the picking done by hand?
All the picking is done by hand. In our case, we are two parts. We have a commercial operation that we're harvesting and picking and selling bulk fruit, and then we also do pick your own, and we do anticipate this is going to be a extraordinarily good weekend, except that the hot temperatures may take things off a little bit. But, you know, in my memory, I thought next weekend was supposed to be Columbus Day.
Dorothy, Columbus Day has nothing to do with Columbus anymore. Dorothy, don't you also come from an apple farming background? When you were growing up in your grandfather's farm in Idaho, would early October also have been the time for picking apples?
Well, actually, I was living in Minnesota at the time. I didn't grow up on the farm, but every fall, my grandfather would send us bushel baskets of the absolute best apples that they had grown. And so I grew up tasting absolutely the best original, delicious apples and Jonathan's and a couple of other varieties. So it was really wonderful. We'd visit every summer and get a look at the orchards.
And Idaho is famous for its potatoes, but does the same soil work well with apples?
Well, when my grandfather homesteaded there, he was kind of a visionary. Most people were planting crops they could sell right away, but he figured that the soil was perfect for growing apples, and so he kind of stuck with it. And in those days with the big trees, it would take 10 years to get fruit, so he had a hard time the first few years, but then he really thrived, and I think it's a sign of his intuition that today that area has lots and lots of apple orchards, so it's just a perfect area for growing apples.
Aren't we talking to you now in Missoula, Montana?
Yep, that's where I live.
Are apples grown in Montana as well?
Well, the Bitterroot Valley, which is just south of Missoula, used to be one of the main apple-producing areas in the country, particularly McIntosh apples, and the industry collapsed early in the century, but there's still quite a few farms there, including some people who are growing apples, many, many different varieties in very scientific ways with underground tubes that carry the fertilizer as well as the water and so forth. So it still is prime apple-growing country, but it just isn't as commercially important as it used to be.
Does it have to be a bit cooler than it is in the South, Steve, for it to be prime apple-growing country?
Well, I think apples are growing in most states. You need...
I don't hear about Florida apples.
No, you don't, and that's one of the ones that, you don't hear about. Probably Alaska, too, although I'm sure there's some orchards in Alaska. You just do things differently depending on where you are. Because if you're going to have a long season, that means you're going to have an early bloom. And spring frosts are one of the limiting factors. And so you either have to control that. The other problem with that is that if your varieties, Dorothy was talking about McIntosh, which is a relatively short variety. For us, it's about a 120-day apple. Actually, up in the Champlain Valley, they can do it in about probably 100 days. But, if they come in and, you're dealing with 100-degree days, that's not great for apples. So you like to, there's so many different varieties out there. Some of them mature in a very short period of time. Some of the newer ones are maturing in about 180 to 190 days.
So they don't all ripen at the same time.
No. We've been picking apples here commercially since the middle of August, and it's going to go on till the last week of October.
And I guess Ginger Golds come first, then McIntosh?
Well, Ginger Golds, Paula Reds, there's a new one out of Minnesota called Zestar. I haven't actually tried that one. And then there's Honeycrisp, which is also out of Minnesota, that's coming in. Galas, McIntosh, Cortlands, and
McCowan's.
It just goes right on.
What varieties are at their peak this weekend?
Well, we're claiming that McCown's, Golden Delicious, Empires are really at their peak. Johnny Golds are at their peak also.
My guests are Steve Clark of Prospect Hill Orchards and Dorothy Patton, co-author of A is for Apple. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In a little while, we'll be taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Dorothy, how much is known about where apples first came from?
Well, they appear to have evolved mainly in Asia Minor, which would the Caucasus, Central Asia, even in the Himalayas around that area. So they're used to cold winters and a varied season, which is one reason why they don't grow well in places like Florida, because there's not enough cold. We think about, gee, plants must like it warm, but some kinds of plants like apples need to have a certain amount of cold every winter before they will grow well.
Have there always been a lot of varieties, or is this something that's developed over the centuries?
Well, actually, apples were being eaten by people at least 8,000 years ago in Switzerland, of all places. The ancient Egyptians planted apples. The Romans grew at least 7 varieties by 200 BC, and then were up to 36 by 50 AD, and they even knew how to graft apples. So they've been around for a long time, but there was a real surge in new varieties in America when the settlers came and started spreading out and planting seeds from cider mills and so forth. At one point, by 1900, there were 5,000 new varieties named in the United States.
Well, you say the settlers planted them? It wasn't all by Johnny Appleseed?
Well, he helped them.
Was there really a Johnny Appleseed, or is that just a Disney cartoon?
No, there really was a Johnny Appleseed, but he was not like the person in the Disney cartoon. He was a very serious kind of a fellow who really believed in the importance of apples and of helping people. So he would go where he knew the next settlers were coming and plant seedling trees from the cider mills and so forth. And then when the settlers came, they could get the plants from him, the trees from the orchards that he planted. So he really helped the settling of America with what he did. He was actually an orchardist, not some funny guy with a tin hat who went around in bare feet and chuckled.
Well, Steve, how long does it take for an apple tree to develop from seed? I'm assuming most of the apple varieties we get are spliced or grafted.
Yeah, most varieties are grafted, so you have true-to-name varieties. And, when you get a tree from the nursery, a one-year whip that's growing in the nursery, when we plant them here, and again, this is changing, one of those things that changes through time. If you are really cutting edge, you're planting those trees right now 2 feet apart in rows that are about 12 or 13 feet apart, and you're looking for production, some production the second year, full production the third year. That's real cutting edge stuff. Standard in New York State, not so much the Hudson Valley, but more Western New York, is 4 to 6 feet in the row and about 13 feet between the rows. you can look to be in full production the fifth year. And, you know, a lot of other growers are in the 8x16 to 10x18 range, and it's going to take 6 to 7 years to get into full production.
Dorothy, you mentioned that the settlers really thought it was important to have apples, partly because before processed sugar, apples were a sweetener, which is something that is making kind of a comeback now, isn't it?
Well, I think the concern about refined sugar and its effects on health have definitely been important. And as a matter of fact, a number of the recipes, my husband is the one who developed most of the recipes for our book. I did a lot of the sidebars and information on growing apples and so forth. But he has several recipes where apples are used just as a sweetener. You know, their apple juice or apple cider is added rather than using refined sugar. So yes, it's a wonderful kind of a sweetener. And for the settlers, here was a food that they could store for weeks, sometimes some varieties for months during the winter, or they could dry them and store them. Very healthy food with lots of vitamins and antioxidants and other good things. And very versatile. The apple's about as versatile as it comes.
Well, how long can they last in the state we like, the crunchy state, without refrigeration? Does it vary from variety to variety?
If you're talking about home storage, it depends tremendously on the variety. I think Steve would agree that the summer varieties of apples that tend to be softer and mushier, they don't keep as well in storage. Almost all varieties should be refrigerated if you're keeping them at home for some days before you are going to use them. Fujis you can leave out for a few days. They don't lose their crispness the way most varieties do. But some apples actually do better in storage. They keep for, if you keep them in the right environment, say 32 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit, they can keep for months, and some of them actually develop more sweetness and flavor, like Honeycrisp is often better after it's been stored for a couple of months.
Are there certain apples that are better for making apple pie than others?
Yes. It depends on the texture of the fruit. The summer apples tend to, if you cook them, they tend to collapse and fall apart. So in an apple pie, you want to have distinct slices that are still present. So you want to have Braeburn is a good apple for pie, Empire, Jonathan, Northern Spy, Granny Smith, Golden Delicious, but the Macintosh, for example, is a little soft for pies. My husband likes to mix varieties when he makes apple pies. Use two or three different varieties in one pie to add depth and richness to the flavor.
You have a test, don't you, to determine whether a certain apple might be good for a pie?
Yes, if you're not sure. If you go to the grocery store and you say, gee, those look like really good apples, I'd like to make a pie, but you're not sure about the texture or the flavor, because some, like Fujis, are wonderful eaten fresh, but we've found that if you cook with just Fujis, the flavor flattens out in cooking, and they're nowhere near as interesting once they're cooked. Tartness is really important in those apples. So what my husband will do, if he's not sure, and he did it just the other day, he was doing some apples for a newspaper column he's writing, is cut the pieces about maybe half an inch thick wedges and wrap them in pastry dough and bake them at 425 degrees for about 25 minutes and then let them cool and taste them. And the ones that are going to make good pie, the slices will still be intact, whereas the ones that aren't the slices will sort of collapse and mush out.
Steve, do you have favorites for pies?
Sure. We prefer Eider Reds. It seems to be have that nice balance. Now, you know, that's an individual choice. You know, what Dorothy's saying is some of the varieties really turn to sauce, and then some of the varieties, like a Johnny Gold, tend to be quite crisp even when they're cooked. And I personally don't like a crunchy apple. Eider Red kind of is in the middle, and it maintains that little bit of a tang. But, you know, if you can mix a couple of different varieties, it's always good. And but we always tell people, well, particularly not so much pies, but if you're going to make sauce, you know, even if those apples get old and they get a little spongy and wrinkly, you can always sauce them and it comes out great.
What makes one apple crisper or tartar than another?
It's just the genetics of the apple. And one of the things that is happening today, you know, you asked about the apples, do they maintain? Braeburn's one of those apples that'll sit on your table. And we have a breeder at the Land-Grant University of Cornell at the Geneva campus who has done a lot of breeding using both Braeburn and Fuji to get that crispness in the fruit so that in the future the consumer is going to be able to pick up some apples that are going to be able to sit on that counter for a week or 2 weeks and still be quite crisp when you pick them up and eat them. And I think it's a very exciting thing. And you know, the flavors are going to be really good too. Plus, a lot of these new varieties are being tested, you know, for many different things, for storability, for flavor, for how good they are horticulturally, how easy they are to maintain, what is their productivity year after year. So, you know, I think in the future the growers are going to be able to have, you know, some really great varieties to be able to offer the consumer.
My guests on Please Explain are Steve Clark of Prospect Hill Orchards in upstate New York, and Dorothy Patton, co-author of A Is for Apple, more than 200 recipes for eating, munching, and cooking with America's favorite fruit. Book has been out for a while, but you can find it on Amazon. It's published by Broadway Books. We will continue our conversation and take your calls at 212-433-9692 right after this. Before we go to the calls and have Dorothy Patton and Steve Clark talk to you, I was given a selection of four apples here. And maybe, Steve and Dorothy, we can talk about these for a moment. An Empire, a Gala, a Mac, and a Honeycrisp. And I took a little bite during that break. The Empire tastes like the most generic apple you could ever imagine. Gala tastes kind of like a delicious, only with more crunch. Is that fair?
No.
No, you don't agree?
No.
I don't either.
Okay. Well, that's my take. Macs are the ones I grew up with, so I don't know what to say about them. But I love the Honeycrisp. It has a kind of a tartness to it that reminds me of Granny Smith without being that sour.
Yeah, Honeycrisp is one of our favorite apples, and it's one that fortunately our friends who have the orchard and the Bitterroot raise, and we go out of our way to try to get our hands on some to keep for the winter because they do store so well and just get better and better as they go on through the winter.
Now, both of you objected so strenuously to what I said. What did I say that you didn't agree with?
Well,
other
than
I was wrong.
Leonard, let me pick on Gala. If you have a good Gala, you know, that to me has been since, you know, we've had it for about 10 or 15 years here. You know, that is the standard apple. I mean, it is the best. And you should be experiencing a whole range of flavors when you bite into it, and then when that apple sits on your tongue and when you swallow it, you should be experiencing a range of flavors. You know, Empire is a great apple in its season, and it shouldn't be that generic. It's certainly more generic than a Gala. That would be my comments.
Yeah, I'm not familiar that much with Empire since it's more of an Eastern variety, but the Galas...
Well, where are the Empire State here?
Yeah, I know. the Gala is one of the apples I really like, and every once in a while I get one that's real flat, and it may have something to do with the way it's been stored, because sometimes these apples are stored in gigantic buildings with just carbon dioxide keeping them company, and I don't know that all varieties store that well in those conditions. So I don't know exactly whether that's the problem with some Galas, but it should have a nice lively flavor and a nice pleasant crunchy texture.
Well, to be honest, I liked all of them. Let's take some calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Peggy from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a couple of questions, actually.
Your name is Peggy?
Heggy.
Heggy, okay.
Yeah. I was able to move out to Brooklyn not too long ago, and I finally have a backyard, and I would like to plant some fruit trees, including an apple tree or two. Now, I'm just wondering about varieties, if there's a certain variety that grows better here than others that is just a basic, nice, sweet apple to eat, and whether or not I need to get two trees for cross-pollination. I've sort of heard that there may be some trees you need to cross-pollinate with other trees, and where I could buy those. And also, my second question is, there's a wonderful apple tree just down the street that's loaded with apples that is really good. Now, can I take a cutting from that tree and get it to grow and produce fruit the way it does?
Steve, I guess we should start with you.
Let me take the second question first. You know, the best thing you can do is buy a couple of apple trees, and when those trees are about 3 years old, take a cutting, and you have to have a young cutting. It can't be an older a piece of wood that's fruited, but a one-year whip in the spring and graft it in, and then it'll grow. If you just plant it, you know, try to get it rooted, that's probably very difficult to do. It would be on its own root. But, you know, my concern for you as a homeowner is that you're going to have problems with diseases and insects, and maybe in Brooklyn you won't, but there's a variety we like. Unfortunately, it doesn't meet your criteria for taste, but Gold Rush is a good late variety, but it's quite a tart variety. Liberty is the same thing. They're both disease-resistant, and they're quite hard, and it'll get you by a lot of the problems homeowners have with them.
Well, how do you fight the disease otherwise?
Well, then you know, you have to go to sprays, and that gets very complicated. And, you know, what you buy in the store, even if you buy it, if you don't understand the cycles of the diseases, your timing's not going to be correct, and you're going to be disappointed. And then even if you did get successful, you know, the squirrels are going to come and eat it, or the birds, or, you know. I hear these horror stories when people come to pick
it up. And worms. Worms as well. Recently went to the farmer's market and was buying some corn, and every one of the corn stalks was infested with worms. I guess even farmers have problems along those lines sometimes.
Well, yeah, it believe it or not, it is a dog-eat-dog world out there.
Or a worm-eat-apple world.
Well, it can be that, too.
Barbara from Stamford, Connecticut.
Hi. We have what I assume is an old apple tree on our property. We just moved there 3 years ago, and I didn't even think that the apples were edible, but we decided to experiment and discovered they make wonderful applesauce. I don't want to spray the tree, but I was wondering if there was something I could feed it to encourage more apples and better apples.
Does she have to prune that tree?
Yeah, when you start with an old tree, the best thing you can do is start with a chainsaw, because if it's tall, you want to get it down. But what you want to do is you want to regenerate new growth, because that's what's going to give you the good apples. Now, it's the third year by the time a branch. The first year it grows, the second year it grows more, but the first year growth sets fruit buds, and then in the third year, those fruit buds will blossom and give you fruit. And what you need is to regenerate that tree. And you need to do it in a cycle of about 3 years. You can't just totally cut it down. But, you know, if you really begin to seriously cut that tree, you'll see the regrowth. And, you know, just a normal fertilizer will be fine. And I think you'll really begin to enjoy that at about the third year. You will see that tree just really rejuvenate.
Talking about edible, Dorothy, I've heard that apple seeds are somewhat poisonous. Is that true?
I don't think they. I think they have a tiny little bit of cyanic acid in them, but I don't think it's not enough to it's not a problem, because you can make like apple juice by just cutting. You don't have to take out the seeds of the cores when you if you're steaming apples to get juice, or if you're making cider and so forth. So it's not a problem that I'm aware of.
I used to love to eat those little seeds when I was a kid. They tasted like nuts to me. But then somebody told me they were poisonous, and I thought, well, I'm not dead, but I better not push it. Teresa from Passaic, New Jersey. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Oh, when you said apples, I stopped everything. I love Macowans. I've been saying Macoun for years. Macowan apple.
Is it Macowan Macoun?
Nope. You tell me the proper pronunciation.
Tomato, tomato.
What do you say, Steve?
I like Macoun.
Okay, so it's Macouns.
Well, my husband says Macoun.
Okay, whatever they are, the season's too short, and we can't wait. But I've gotten a rotten bag just now from Pathmark, and I looked. They said a whole bag full for $2.99. But the best really come from Vermont. We get them on our way up to Stowe or New York State along the thruways. You're traveling. They're oodles. tree upon tree. You know, it's great. I just love them, but you can't bake with them. And when I was a kid, I grew up with apples. We were so poor. My father would take the whole core out, put some sugar on top, and put them in a dish in a big black thatcher stove that was going for heat. So when you came in the house from school or work, wherever, you had that beautiful apple smell.
Thank you so much for calling us, Teresa. Where is your farm located, Steve?
We're in Milton, which is 75 miles north of New York on the west bank of the Hudson. We're just a little south of Poughkeepsie on the other bank. And like I said, my family's been here since 1817. It wasn't always apples, but we're much more diversified than that. We do cherries and peaches and nectarines and pears as well as apples.
Jennifer from Maplewood, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. In fact, what you just said about the pears and peaches and nectarines maybe helps the answer to my question, but I have an allergic reaction to apples sometimes, and sometimes I don't. But I know that I have what's called a birch tree pollen allergy, which is peaches, plums, nectarines, almonds, and cherries. So I'm wondering if it has to do with where they're grown or just the type of apple.
My guess is it's the type of apple. We've had that question a lot. My daughter goes to farmers markets in New York City, and that's where the question comes up. And my father-in-law had that problem, too. He said, oh, I can't eat apples.
I can. It's just some cause a reaction, some don't. And I want to find the ones that don't cause a reaction.
Well, I would try, an Eastern Golden Delicious. That seems to be the most generic, and when people have tried that, that say, I can't eat apples, and they have not gotten a reaction. So, and the other thing, I would try to stay away from all store-bought apples. Pretty much have wax on them, and your reaction sometimes may be to the wax.
Right, yeah. I generally try to buy the organic apples anyway for my, the fruits for my kids, too. But
thank you for calling us, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Dorothy, do you have anything to add to that?
That's interesting that the different varieties, but, of course, the chemistry of each variety is very complex, and that's part of what makes the different flavors as well. I'm interested in that, in your information, Steve, because I have a friend here who has that same problem.
Let's go to Susan from Connecticut. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, this is a great show. I was just going out this afternoon to pick some apples from it grew by itself, and I looked it up on the Internet, and from the picture of the apple, I was able to tell that it's called a sheep nose apple tree, and I guess it's an antique variety. I've never seen a sheep nose apple out in the store. It's a very big apple, and it does have this funny kind of pointed, funny little face on the end of it, which is, I guess, why they call it a sheep nose. But it's a fabulous eating apple. It has layers of flavor that you can't believe. I mean, really, if you get into apples, they're like wine.
Well, do either of you know about this apple? Steve, Dorothy?
Yeah, it is one of the older varieties. It's one of the well-known older varieties. And to be honest with you, I have seen a few in my life. Just in my business, we tend to push the envelope forward rather than backward. There are some wonderful apples, though, that have been around for a very long period of time.
Well, with the popularity of heirloom tomatoes, I would think that we would start seeing more and more heirloom apples.
Yes, there are actually organizations that exist to help foster growing heirloom varieties of fruits. There's an organization called the North American Fruit Explorers. It's NAFEX, they call themselves, NAFEX, and at NAFEX.org you can go online and look at this this organization, not just apples, but all kinds of different fruits, because we do have a lot of these heirloom varieties, and some of them have fabulous flavors, but they're not beautiful. Like, there are a lot of russeted apples. They have sort of a bumpy brownish skin, and people seem to think it's a disease, but it's not a disease. It's a natural process that occurs on those apples. I have a tree called Roxbury Russet, which is possibly the oldest variety of apple in this country, and it has a wonderful rich sweet flavor and a very dense flesh, but it's doesn't ever get a pretty color. It goes from green to yellow, and it has the russeting on the surface. It also stores quite well. So there's a lot of wonderful varieties out there. For adventuresome folks, I would recommend Nafex, and then there's also nurseries. There's South Meadow Fruit Farms that sells many, many different, they sell a couple hundred different varieties of fruit. So if you're adventuresome and you want to try something that you can't buy in the stores, these kinds of places are worth trying.
And Steve, isn't that a problem for farmers, that people want a perfect piece of fruit each time?
Yes, they do. And then, of course, as soon as you get a variety, well, Gala is a perfect example. It started out as a fairly colorless variety with great flavor, and then you mutation, and what we're planting now is 100% red. I mean, same thing happened with Red Delicious, but, you know, that is beginning to change a little bit. You know, Americans always seem to shop with their eyes, and somehow they don't use their taste buds, whereas Europeans are much more attuned to the flavors and the texture.
And
the fruit.
With that in mind, we have very little time, but Dick from Westfield, New Jersey, you wanted to make a comment along those lines?
Yes, I just came back from France, and had an apple every day over there, and the taste—they were absolutely reliable and had a much more intense flavor than I've ever encountered here. And just wondering what the difference is, and I suspect it's probably a shorter distribution chain.
Is it that, or is it soil? What do you think, Dorothy?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with how apples are produced. In this country, most of the apples come from Washington State, which is not that far from where I live. And they store the apples in this carbon dioxide storage in these big buildings, and they pump out the air, and they keep them for months at a time. They also pick the apples, like Red Delicious. When I was a kid, we had.
Wait, we have
apples.
To stop it there. I'm sorry, but we'll get
the point.
We're
running out of time.
We've run out of time. Dorothy Patton, author of A is for Apple, Steve Clark of Prospect Hill Orchards. Thank you both so much for being on Please Explain today.
It's been fun.
Okay.
On Monday's show, Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, reveals the ups and downs of his close but rocky relationships with world leaders, from George W. Bush to Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez, and then Richard Russo with his latest novel, Bridge of Sighs, historian James Gaines on the connections between the American and French revolutions. Also, Jay Winnick discusses how Russia, France, and America all influenced one another at the end of the 18th century. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Sarah English and Blake Nees-Schick. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Julia Corcoran, Jacob Stevens, Jennifer Keeney-Sendro, and contributing producer Bonnie LeFave. Jay Cowett was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopez, your host. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.